Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Ballabha Girivaradhari.
Gopi Sarabha Girvanakari
Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana.
Yashodanandana
Jamunatira
Vanachari
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari.
Kunjabihari
Gopi Janna Ballabha Girivaradhari.
Gopi Janna Ballabha Girivaradhari
Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamunatira
Vanachari
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Shri Radha Madhava Astasaki ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Chandraya Mandir ki jai. Narayanam Namaskrityam.
Narayanam
Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Devam Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Devam Sarasvatim
Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudiraye.
Tato Jaya Mudiraye.
Krishna Svadama Upagate.
Krishna
Sutama Bhagate Jnana Dharmari Bhisaha Kalo Nashta Drisha Esha
Kalo Nashta Drisha Esha
Puranarko Dunoritaha
Puranarko Dunoritaha
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, as far as I understand, Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 10, Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwaraka, text 13.
That is correct.
Okay. Sarve.
Sarve.
Te,
te,
animishai,
animishai,
akshai,
akshai,
sarve te nimishai akshaish,
sarve te nimishai akshaish,
tam anu druta chetasaha,
tam anu druta chetasaha,
Vikshanta sneha sambada.
Vikshanta sneha sambada.
Vichelus tatra tatraha.
Vichelus tatra tatraha.
Bolie.
Sarve te ni nishayar aksh.
Sarvate nimishai sakshair.
Tamanudruta chetasaha. Vikshanta sneha sambadha. Vichela tatra taha.
Sarvete nimishai rakshais.
Tam anudruta chetasaha.
Vikshanta sneha sambadha. Vichelus tatra taha.
Anyone else?
Sarve. All. They. Animishai. Without twinkling of the eyes. This is a familiar word from the word Naimish Aranya. Aranya means forest, and Naimish means one blink. So it says that Vishnu's gaze upon that forest doesn't deviate even one blink. So whatever happens in the Naimish Aranya, Krishna's watching it, you know, and Vishnu's watching it very scrutinizingly. So here they didn't even blink. Nimishai. Akshayi.
By the eye.
Tamanu. After him. Krishna.
Druta Chaitasaha.
Melted heart.
Vikshantaha.
Looking upon him. Sneha sambadaha. So sneha, of course, like affection, and sambada, connected. Bound by pure affection. Vichelahu. Began to move. Tatra tatra. Here and there. So they did.
If I could just interrupt for a moment. First of all, I want to welcome everyone and everyone that just came in. Hanuman Prashekh Swami is very graciously agreed to give us class this morning on Srimad Bhagavatam. We're on 1, chapter 10, verse 13. And at this time, we need everybody to please mute themselves. I don't want to hang up on anybody, so please, everybody mute this time. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Mona Vrata. Okay. Sarve te nimishair akshais tamanu druta chetasaha vikshanta sneha tata tatraha. All their hearts were melting for him on the pot of attraction. They looked at him without blinking their eyes, and they moved hither and thither in perplexity. Actually, we've been traveling. Now we're in Boise, Idaho, we're mentioning. And we're here, actually, Radhika Raman, our good disciple. He showed up yesterday. He was he's teaching at, actually, he's a associate professor, but he's tenured. permanent professor at William & Mary College now, which is the second oldest college in the United States. Actually, it's the oldest university. It was even a university before Harvard started. And he's doing well, very active there. And he and Krishna Kshetra are about to release a book by a major publisher, a companion to the Bhagavatam. And it's going to showing like some extracts and summaries, because they wanted it, because many people wouldn't have time to read the whole book. And also they're preparing another book, which is supposed to go with that. Actually, it was the original book, which is contemporary thinking on Srimad Bhagavatam. And so many big scholars all over the world wanted to participate. And, things have changed because of Prabhupada and people's estimation of the value of the history of Srimad Bhagavatam. So then the publisher asked them to do the second book as a companion for people who didn't have familiarity with it. So a lot of nice preaching everywhere. Yeah. So we're here. And so because of that, I've been struggling. I like to also attend the classes, but we haven't been able to do it. So I'm sorry. I don't know what things have been covered and what things have been discussed. So maybe a little redundant. So please inform us. But basically, again, this first canto is like a preface. The basic scene is Naimisharanya, and the sages, they want to do something good for everybody, and so they're trying to do fire sacrifices, but it's not working. So they ask Sudha Goswami, and he then answers their questions. What is the essence of all yajna, all dharma? What is the essence of all scriptures? How does Krishna relate to this world? Incarnations, energies, and especially what is the significance of the Krishna incarnation? And now that Sri Krishna has departed, where have principles taken shelter? So he answers almost all their questions in the second chapter. And there's a lot of formality in terms of what's the word? Illuminating when you ask the question, you introduce yourself. Who am I? What was my perspective? And then illuminate the position of the person you're asking. You're like this and that. We are asking you for this reason because of that. Because knowledge is not impersonal. And then when Sudha Goswami answers, he also identifies himself, the sages, everything else, the value of their questions. Prashna, I can't remember. I'm supposed to memorize these from Bhaktivinoda, but I've forgotten the one. I have been justly questioned by you because your questions relate to Sri Krishna, and therefore they're good for everybody, like that. And they very beautiful answers like that. A lot of discussion of dharma. What is the supreme dharma? And what is, what's the word? Dharma that's been cut off from Krishna. How it's useless. Shrama evi kevalam. So then he answers in chapter 3, then he specifically talks about the incarnations. So a lot of the purports are short, because there's different incarnations, Dhammantari, Naranarayan. And some are a little longer. Buddha, for example, is a very nice summary. Anybody asks us, what is your opinion about Buddha and Buddhism? So right there in the third chapter, Prabhupada gives a nice purport, explaining our idea of Buddhism, like that. And then he says, Srimad Bhagavatam, idam bhagavata nama puranam brahma samitam uttama shloka charitam chakaram bhagavan rishahi. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God. And so then that's the answer. The age of Kali, we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, fortunate people, intelligent people, like that. Yeah. Okay. So, we're still online here. Okay, 1 second.
I'm sorry, it's just people come in and out. That's why you hear noise like that.
I'm trying to keep my chat box open, so if we lose contact, somebody can contact me. Okay. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is a literary incarnation. We noticed that Prabhupada in the biography of Lord Chaitanya in the introduction, he doesn't describe Lord Chaitanya as the incarnation. He says Lord Chaitanya, the ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Lord Chaitanya is a covered incarnation. The manifest form is the Bhagavad Purana. Yeah. And I actually, if you go to our webpage at jayarama.us, there's Hanuman there and there's some flowers. So if you click on the flowers are hiding different links. We've hidden different things all over the place there. Yeah. But one is a quote from Prabodhananda Saraswati. It's really nice. You know. He says, I will now teach you a mantra which is hidden from all the Vedas. One who knows this mantra purifies those who know all the rituals of the Vedas. There are no rules and regulations for chanting this mantra. It is the essence of all essences. It is the wild bliss of all wild blisses. He goes on like that. Really intense. He said that mantra is Radhe. Like that. So we can also chant Hare. He says, oh fortunate one, who can understand me? You know, who can appreciate that? Once you chant this day and night, you know, like that. So that's it. You can condense the whole thing into the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and you can condense the whole thing into the one word, Hare. Hare. Yeah. Time of death. Hope we say that. And but then the more expanded form is Srimad Bhagavatam. And first canto then gives the whole orientation like that. So then Vyasadeva, they asked him, well, okay, well, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence, but come on, Vyasadeva had already written, he'd already, you know, edited, divided the Veda into four Vedas. Then he wrote Vedanta Sutra. Then for ordinary people, he wrote all the Puranas, you know. So how is it that, and then he wrote the Mahabharata. So why is it he was writing something else like that? You know? So then the next three chapters, you mentioned before, of course, is Narada and Vyas. And then Narada Muni straightens Vyasadeva out, basically says everything he's written is like a pilgrimage place for crows. Yeah. And so Vyasadeva says, yes, you're right. And he's going to meditate. He sits down to meditate on the pastimes in an ashram. He has to have an ashram. And he can see everything, Krishna's energies. And Suddha Goswami says, before that, he says, I shall now try to make you hear this as I heard it. And it's the very end of chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Before he starts to describe his meditation, I shall now try to make you hear this as I heard it. I think that's where it is. It's very important. The yata idam is idam something or other. Because at the point is that the Puranas are not so much concerned with precise repetition of the words or the contents. The Puranas are more concerned with getting the idea across. And so they may change the way they're presenting things, and our acharyas may change the things, and Prabhupada's translations, you know, may be more contextual or this or that. You know? Actually, Radhika was mentioning that this morning, that so many times the acharyas will put in therefore, and yet, and thus, which is not there in the original Sanskrit, but it makes the idea clear what they're talking about. You know? So that's because they're trying to get the idea across. So there's a long purport after that where Prabhupada says that you know, we should not try and screw out some weird meaning for our glorification, but at the same time, we have to present it in a way that is tasty, attractive to the people hearing it like that. And we have to understand what the meaning is and get that across. It's very important. So then Vyasadeva starts to describe, you know, the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, who's going to be the principal audience. And then, you know, of course, Sukadeva Goswami. But in that, of course, it comes up the story of Ashwatthama and Draupadi being a mild and gentle lady. And then it goes back into then Krishna's going to leave after that. They offer water to the departed ancestors. Then Kunti and everybody come. You can imagine them coming. And with the whole intention to try and catch Krishna, keep him from going. Kunti has, of course, these beautiful prayers. But finally, Yudhishthira implores him, and Krishna stays. Then Yudhishthira expresses the fact that, oh my goodness, I've killed all these people, so many problems, you know. Why? Was it really worth it? So the next chapter, then they meet Bhishmadeva, and Bhishmadeva convinces him, yes, you did the right thing. Krishna wanted this, so it's okay. Then we see the whole example of Bhishmadeva showing us how to leave the body. earlier Narada Muni showed us, you know, how one develops Krishna consciousness throughout his whole life. First example, they're passing through different stages. And then Bhishmadev shows us specifically at the time of death how probably we have to make a separate special effort to become absorbed in Lila Smarnam, remembering past times, certain stories, images, and that will allow us to really get the, you know, the final detachment, you know, into our system, and then go like him, depart. So now, you know, Krishna's going to leave for Dwarka and arrive in Dwarka. And if you also hear, there'll be beautiful prayers by the ladies in Hastinapur. And these prayers, you can see that different people are on different levels. We're discussing the prayers of Queen Kunti here in our Bhakti Bhai Bhava program. And it seems her comprehension of Krishna, you know, pretty much is like Vaikunthanath, or more actually like Paramatma. You know, she sees him as being Namashe Purusham Twadyam Ishvaram Prakrute Param. Yeah. You're the master of the material nature, you're the original person. And that's, maybe she advances by trying to glorify Krishna, and she begins to realize him as the friend of Arjuna, finally. Shri Krishna, Krishna Saka, Vrishni Risha Bhavani Drug. But she's very much conscious of Krishna as the Supreme Lord, like that. And no, there's no, you know, not serving Krishna in his intimate aspects, which Krishna appreciates more, you know. Yeah. So, but she's making advancements. So the prayers, when we run different levels, different prayers are good for us to meditate, contemplate, to advance, you know, to be more qualified to serve Krishna. Because that's the whole thing, you know, this lifetime or that lifetime. You know, even if we don't, you know, if we lose our consciousness, we become babies again. But still, at heart, we'll be looking for this. We'll be hankering. And then we'll be able to grab it as soon as different kinds of association come, as little children or things like that. So we're engaged in a project where we shouldn't feel, we should be looking for how our progress is eternal, rather than getting some result like we built this temple or we did this, you know, made some money or, you know, for Krishna, or made so many people. Yeah, those things are important, but the real thing is the aspect of eternality, because, you know, go on improving our service forever so that we can become qualified to really help Krishna. Yeah, and his different endeavors and efforts like that. Yeah. So it's all, we should look at our, you know, our development in terms of that. And then after Krishna arrives in Dwarka, then Sudha Goswami will say, well, but wait a second, let me back up again here. I got kind of deviated. Let me get back to the birth of Maharaj Pariksit. So then that is out of chronology, because it's a flashback and he's back on track again. Appearance of Pariksit, disappearance of Dhritarashtra, and then disappearance of Krishna, disappearance of the Pandavas. Maharaj Pariksit becomes the king, chastisement, reward of Kali, all these kind of things, and then finally, appearance of Sukadeva Goswami. And that's a lot. It's a whole canto. It's about maybe 9 months worth of study, appreciation. Even that is still kind of superficial, you know. What we really want to do is take these to heart. You can read the Bhagavatam, or maybe you can understand what you're doing logically, like we're doing right now, in Jnana Yoga. Or you can begin to contemplate it, taking certain verses, reciting them like Lord Chaitanya and Subhadamadhar, Jnana Yoga. And then finally, you can reawaken your eternal relationship to Krishna, you know, to the Bhagavatam, like that. So, you know, and then of course, we're probably doing some of the more advanced things, even in the neophyte stage, and even the advanced stage, we're still doing some of the neophyte things. You know? But the whole thing is, of course, is smarnam, you know, to arrive at that point by hearing and chanting. So, of course, it's describing here, as far as I can understand, of course, it's describing how Krishna's going to leave, and it's describing the whole scene of Krishna's departure. And because they have personal association with him, by his mercy, that was beginning to wake up their feelings, so their hearts were all melting. I think that probably is a very nice purport then. Yeah. Translation again. All their hearts were melting for him on the pot of attraction. Huh. they looked at him without blinking their eyes, and he moved hither and thither in perplexity. That was purports written in India before he came to the West. Krishna is naturally attractive for all living beings because he is the chief eternal amongst all eternals. He alone is the maintainer of the many eternals. This is stated in the Katha Upanishad. Nine. So, of course, this is Katha Upanishad. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo viradati kamam. And it's easy to remember the verse number because it's double trouble for the Mayavadis. 2213, double bad luck for the Mayavadis. Prabhupada quotes it many times. It's very easy. The Sanskrit is so clear that it's very difficult to distort it. You know? Although they try. You know? The second part, I don't know from memory, but I think actually the second part is what Prabhupada says after that. And thus one can obtain permanent peace and prosperity by revival of one's eternal relationship with him, by revival, now forgotten under the spell of Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord. It's a very long, compound sentence. In the introduction to the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says this Bhagavatam will satisfy the current need of human society, and by reciting it, people can become one in peace, prosperity, and friendship with a common cause. So I use that many times as a slogan in terms of writing things, you know. Peace, prosperity, and friendship. So prosperity, yeah. Prosperity and friendship with a common cause. And here it says permanent peace and prosperity. So maybe the phrase is coming from the whole Katha Upanishad verse. Okay. And also for me it's significant because as far as I understand, yeah, we came from a developed relationship with Krishna. We could have. And even if we go back to the spiritual world, the option is still there to come. And so it's nice. Because one group says that, well, we were existing in a marginal potency where our relationship with Krishna wasn't developed. But here, Prabhupada is saying, revival. You know, we have to revive our eternal relationship with him, now forgotten. Then he says, once this relationship is slightly revived, the condition so that once becomes free from the illusion of the material energy. Like that. So this is there's two symptoms of sadhana bhakti. And one, first one is relief from distress. And the second one is auspiciousness. But to me, it seems also the word could also be translated as harmony. You know? First off, we get free from our connection to Maya, which is always non-harmonious, always conflicts, crashes. Then we start to get integrated with reality. And of course, the external energy also, daivihiyesha gunamayi. And then everything becomes harmonious. Everything is happening, our family relations, our social relations, our community, our church, you know, our health, our everything is in harmony. It's all auspicious. It's all going towards the same thing. It's not frustrating, but rather now it's integrating. Everything's a step in the same direction. You know? Okay. And so we can become free from the illusion of material energy, distress, and becomes mad after the association of the Lord. Adoshvada, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Nartana Vritti. Bad habits go away. Nishta, we become fixed. Ruchi, and we get a taste of this, actual spiritual life, not freedom from distress, but actual taste, you know, of serving Krishna, you know, transcendentally. And so then we become addicted, asaktis. So it's describing these different levels here. And mad after the association of the Lord. This association is made possible not only by personal contact with the Lord, but also by association with his name, fame, form, and quality. So this is called, we did successfully before. We've had a little bit of study of this for our Bhakti for our course in Radha Desh, and also in Bhakti by Bhava, we're into the southern part of Nectar of Devotion. So Bhava become this point where there's very strong emotion. You know, us Saktis were attached. Us Saktis were attached. And actually, someone's trying to call me. I haven't clicked them off right here. Us Saktis were attached. Okay. Then Bhava. You know? So, get an example. You have a seed, little seed, the size of a match head. You wonder, what is this? You know? You plant it, you water it. Sambandha. It's a seed. We have to water it. You know? Then it grows. Okay, it's got a sapling. What is it? I don't know. It's got leaves. I don't know. It's got flowers. I don't know those. And the little fruit comes out. Oh, it's an apple. Like that. Yeah? So, then that's the Bhava stage. In the stage of Bhava, there's no doubt about what is our relationship with Krishna. Yeah? Yeah? But rather, it's there. It's clear. But it's not relishable. You know, Krishna can't relish a green apple. And so in Bhava, the only difference between Bhava and Prema is just going ahead and with sunshine, whatever it takes at that level, to fully awaken to the point where now Krishna can appreciate our service. It becomes intense enough. And that stage, you burn up the final contamination, like getting the oxides out of the gold metal. Yeah. So Bhava is divided into five aspects. Vibhava is the stimulus that makes everything else happen. And some of those reactions are involuntary, like shivering or becoming stunned. And this comes directly from this visuddha sattva, you know, existence of the soul. And some of them, then they take a little intelligence to manifest, deliberately fanning Krishna, you know, or dancing for Krishna, or singing. This is Vibhava. You know? Sorry, Anubhava. So walking hither and thither, it sounds like it's kind of in between. You know, your intelligence is just not working well enough to figure out what to do to serve Krishna. But it's just some kind of spontaneous thing. You can't control yourself. It's just coming like that. You know? And then Vibhichari Bhava are temporary things that come sometimes and just enhance this. Like we're mentioning, maybe when Mother Yashoda sees Krishna wrapped up in the coils of the slimy snake, Kaliya, she may say all kinds of, you know, bad things about Kaliya's mothers and sisters. And, you know, Mother Yashoda doesn't talk like that normally. You know? But still, under those conditions, it's like very charming, you know. She just forgets herself and she acts like a tiger, you know. So it's a Vibhichari Bhava. It comes for some time, and then it goes away, goes back into the ocean. So the basis of everything is Stai Bhava. It's just like Dhanaramara gives his book, Waves of Devotion. For me, it's been great help understanding Nectar of Devotion. And then David Haberman, he's a professor. He's also translated Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he has the whole translation and commentaries by the acharyas, but especially his introductions, really nice, about 25 pages, because he gives the whole, social historical perspective of Rupa Goswami and what was happening at that time. And he also gives the whole literary history, the idea of rasa developing in the Vedic literatures. Yeah. Very illuminating. Yeah. So the Stai Bhava, it's like the water. And you've got the wind, you have the waves, you have, you know, the tides. But the Stai Bhava is Stai, fixed. Our basic relationship with Krishna as a servant, as a friend, as an admirer, as a parent, as a lover. And so that Stai Bhava then is what matures into our basic attachment for Krishna, Rati, Vatsalya Rati, or like that. And then in that attachment to Krishna, becoming, as he's explaining here, very attached to Krishna, then in the tug and pull with Krishna, the juice is produced. And that's rasa. So some ways, technically, we say, what is your rasa with Krishna? We're talking about more like saying, well, you know, what is your rati, you know, for Krishna? And the rasa is produced. But it's the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. So here's describing that, this association is made possible not only by personal contact with the Lord, but also by association with his name, fame, form, and quality. So Vibhava, associated with Krishna, the stimulus, has two categories, Alambana and Udipana. So Alambana is Krishna directly being the stimulation for this insane attachment for him. And Udipana is things in relationship with Krishna, like Krishna's temple, Krishna's very superior devotees, or here his qualities. Now, sometimes it's a little hard to tell which is Alambana and which is Udipana, whether it's Krishna directly or Krishna's, things association with him like that. But Prabhupada is saying it's not the higher things, the higher devotees are also included as a sort of Radharani. Associating with Radharani will also make you mad with attachment to Krishna. So she becomes Vibhava. Anyway, it's a very complicated thing like that, describing all of this. And as I understand, Prabhupada makes this comment. At that time, Navanyaya was the prominent idea, like Aristotle. Everybody was trying to analyze everything, and that was knowledge. So Rupa Goswami then showed that bhakti is not this sentiment. It's a whole scientific way why things interact and react and all these kind of things like that, bringing us to the platform of pure, spontaneous, uninterrupted, intense, emotional love for Krishna. And so he's describing this here already. And of course, in Hastinapur, they're not as advanced as the devotees in Dwarka. You know? So we're going to find that when the ladies offer their prayers, they say, oh, here he is, as we remember him, before the creation, the Supreme Lord. So they're very great mystical experiences, but they're full of Aishwarya, opulence and grandeur and eternality, like that. And, devotees on the higher levels, they also use this. Some people accept Shantaras as a rasa. Other people don't accept it as a rasa. But Prabhupada says, whatever it is the basis of everything else, like that. Krishna's flutes in Shantaras, Krishna's garlands in Shantaras. Probably the rasa mandala is also in Shantaras. So you see different things combining together, and they may stimulate us. This association is made possible not only by personal contact with the Lord, but also by association with his name, fame, form, and quality. Srimad Bhagavatam trains the conditioned soul to the stage of perfection by submissive hearing from the pure devotee. So we're doing this Bhakti Bhai Bhava course, and it is extremely frustrating trying to do it all by internet and also just trying to organize the thing and trying to reduce it to some, integrate it without reducing it to something which is institutionalized. Because in some ways, this level is a very intimate relationship between teacher and student. But here we're trying to make something which, if you have a Bhakti Bhai Bhava degree, it has some kind of universal meaning, Yeah, different places are going to teach differently, go through the Bhagavatam. So it's a lot of work to try and generate something which is like, can be handled by an institution, which was probably a special contribution. And at the same time, it doesn't dampen the enthusiasm for individual appreciation, but actually helps it. Viola Spolin, one of my teachers, she generated this whole theory of games as the highest educational media, or one of them, because you can set certain rules to the game, and those will stimulate the players to use their creativity and intelligence. And as long as they're using their inspiration, creativity, there's no rules. You can, as long as you don't break the rules of the game, you can do anything. You can have somebody climb on somebody else's shoulders. You can, So that way, these two aspects, jnana and dhyana, rules and regulations, logical things and inspiration, intuition are really stimulated. What she points out in most schools is really lacking, most education like that. So we're trying to develop all this. And one of the things we're experiencing is that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati apparently said that you can spend 2 weeks on each verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, and even more. So that we're doing one chapter a week, which we've come to realize this is a good pace, you know. But we have to remember again and again that all we're doing is like an overview, you know. And I'm putting a lot of notes down, and TTD, and make a comment. Okay, then so later on when I do my searches, when I go through it again, because you want to go through this again and again, then I'll find those, remember, oh yeah, I wanted to work on this, okay. I have a summary, I have an overview, I know what's happening. I'm going to pick up on certain things. It's not going to be time to do everything in this lifetime. I have a certain service, you know, so I need to develop my more profound understanding of the Bhagavatam. Srupadamana Mars, maybe a letter else he told me, that he asked Prabhupada about getting a laboratory to do our own research work in terms of preaching, you know, to the scientists. And Prabhupada said, it's so expensive, and they already have so much knowledge. He said, you can do it. It was practical, but he said, already they have so much knowledge. You know? He said, knowledge isn't the problem. He said, what you need to do is sharpen your intelligence on Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and then show them how to put their knowledge together in a better way. He said, then they'll be very impressed, and they'll want to understand what your perspective is, how you got this perspective. Okay. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam, we don't have to, if we go ahead, and rather than trying to dig into depth, we don't have to do that. Rather, we can go ahead and just keep on reading. Because, yeah, Narada Muni shows us one time how to become self-realized. Starting off with a mother who was a mudha, like that. The point of being Narada Muni. All the steps, one after another. Wonder what happened to his mother. She must have also become somebody very elevated. So, but then there are many variations, and then in the texts of the Srimad Bhagavatam following, Vyasadeva will show us so many variations. So in some ways, we don't have to dig deep, you know, too deeply for cross references and all these kind of things. Just keep on reading, because the acharyas themselves will give us the different perspectives and the more depth we need as we go on like that. And we can make very rapid progress. You know, we just go on understanding and going deeper, 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 get rid of our stupidity, our unnecessary, you know, self-reproachment, you know, our unnecessary false glorification. And go deeper and deeper in all these different levels like that. And our karma yoga, in the beginning we have to do what our nature dictates. And more that becomes a minor thing. We just go to work automatically. We deal with all these things automatically. And we're just starting to see all these things in terms of like our development of spiritual consciousness, the kind of people Krishna is sending us to meet at work or in our, you know, whatever family association. So more and more we just become full-time preachers all the time, you know, wherever we are. Okay. So I'm kind of appreciating in this verse. It's just a nice description of the development of consciousness in the people in Hastinapur, and how Krishna's leaving, and they're manifesting his relationships, you know, with Krishna, maybe for the first time. And then but he's giving them associations so they can go to this level. So anybody have any questions or comments, anything like that?
Okay, you've unmuted in free conferencing. Anyone have any questions or comments?
I have a question if I'm unmuted. Hold on, let me.
I had to mute. All right. Bidugda?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
No, this is Nahari's asking the question and his volume's down.
Oh, he's asking a question. I muted him. I thought he was. Nahari, are you there?
I am. But if Doug has a question, he can go.
Oh, I'm sorry, because your volume was so low. I just thought you were talking to somebody else.
Oh, no. I was. Do I sound normal now?
No,
is
your
volume okay?
Yeah, a little better, yeah.
Oh! I'm sorry. I had my mouthpiece way up in the air because I was just listening to class. I forgot to bring it down to my mouth. I'm sorry. I was going to ask, I guess, the old question we hear many times, but I'd be interested in Maharaj's take on it. Because you mentioned that, you know, we all have an attachment to Krishna. And then you said, or maybe we did. And, you know, so that gets to, well, did we or didn't we? And it's sort of an art. It's all senior devotees listening in here. So I was wondering sort of your take on that. We hear both sides of the coin, that we have and already have an established relationship with Krishna, that we somehow or other we've forgotten. It just simply needs to be reawakened. And that's certainly my position from everything I read in Prabhupada's books, but yet there seems to be another side. I'm not quite sure how they justify that, that it hasn't already been established, but yet it will become established. It's the potential is there. And I was wondering what you could say in that regard.
Yeah, I think someone once made this point that it's not something that Prabhupada emphasizes. And it became so political, and like, it's a political thing. It's a very passionate kind of question. Because as I understand, there's people saying, well, you know, Prabhupada didn't give you everything, and we have to go to other acharyas and get the broader perspective, and he would have wanted this, and so on. And so this is one point where they say, well, okay, Prabhupada didn't give you everything, or maybe he didn't know. Sometimes it goes to that, you know. But or else he knew, but he gave you something else because you're Westerners. But if you come to our acharya, you know, his Prabhupada's godbrother, he'll tell you the real thing, you know. And so it becomes like a political thing. So that's part of the thing. It's a very, what's the word, passionate question with political motivations behind it. Our guru knows more than you, guru. Join our organization. Then beyond that, there's a couple of places where Prabhupada said it doesn't really, you know, not that important. The thing is really just one letter he said, whether you were Sayujya Mukti or Sarupya Mukti, right now you're neither one. And so first thing is to become mukti. And then you can start to figure out, like, this kind of stuff. Just get out of here, you know. And again, it's like, you know, someone tells you there's an atom bomb going to drop on your city in 30 minutes, you know. And you got the head start of everybody else. You go out to your car and you say, well, wait a second, though. My windshield wipers, I didn't, you know, or something. I got to wash my windshield, you know. I said, no, the basic thing works. You get out of the city. So we understand that the basic process works, and hearing and chanting and everything else. And there's almost no mention about the whole thing about where we came from. You know, it's okay, so let's get out of here. So that's the first thing because many times it does. The whole thing just bores me to death sometimes, you know. A lot of the arguments are very logical, you know. So myself, reading through it, because it's a hot topic, I try to take my notes, and I have some notes on it. And then after some time, it becomes kind of redundant. So you stop taking notes. But I got some citations, and generally speaking, the basic principle seems to be this, that we have free will, you know, and it's on the same, it's the same quality as Krishna's free will, you know. It was small, but, you know, our potency is small, but our ability to make choices and decisions is on the same level as Krishna's, because he gave us that, you know. And so therefore, it's like, again, if the Father gives the keys of the car to the son on a Saturday night and gives him $20 and says, okay, you know, you're going to go pick up your couple friends and go to the high school basketball game and stop and get some ice cream afterwards. So I'll see you home by 10 o'clock, you know. So at 10:30, he gets a call from the local police. Hey, you pulled your kids over. There's beer in the car. They're driving recklessly. Now, what do you want us to do, you know? So the ultimate cause, quoting Prabhupada, who and also Aristotle, I suddenly discovered that these categories come from Aristotle. The ultimate cause is the Father, or Krishna, giving the free will. The efficient cause is the Son, using that free will as he wants to use it. And the material cause is the beer. So the problem is being caused by beer, like that. or the, you know, the cup is caused by clay, material cause, the wheel, efficient cause, the potter, the ultimate cause. So we have free will, and Chris is not going to interfere with it. So anytime, any place, we can leave. Well, why did we leave? But that question has no meaning, because if we have free will, there's nothing causing it. Otherwise, it doesn't become free will. So it just, you know, that's why it's somewhat kind of confusing, because we're always thinking of things in condition and perspective. And so therefore, you can't blame anybody else because you got here.
Thank you. It seems when it just reading through Prabhupada's books, it just seems just so crystal clear that we were there with Krishna. I should have written it down. I read recently in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada, I'm going to go back to find some way to find it. It was just so crystal clear where he was talking about how we were with Krishna and engaged in wonderful loving activities. I just don't understand where the other side of the argument comes from. It's
they say
there's a
they say that
go ahead, Kandita, go ahead.
Just real quick, well, they say that after seeing Lord Krishna face to face, he's so beautiful, he's so attractive, it's impossible to ever leave him. So that's what they say, is that, you know, we couldn't have fallen away from that, so therefore we never saw him in the first place. That's the main argument I've heard.
Mm. No, I never heard that one.
Okay, here's
hi. Hi, guys.
Here's my contribution, and because in
John, can we, one more point, then just one more point. Face off, because one of the arguments is that it might see free will that someplace Bhaktivinoda Thakura wrote that we come from a marginal position. And that their idea is that we existed as a jiva soul, but we hadn't yet manifested our relationship. So that's one of the arguments. Now, the fact that we come from the marginal position when we enter the material world, no one's been able to show me the exact citation. But it's not like contrary to our point, because our point would be that you come from Goloka, then you fall down to the level of Ayodhya, and you can go back up. So yeah. Right. So the final entry point can be from the marginal level, from where is it, kind of back ocean. But that is not a contrary
point.
Thing, the fact that we're coming down like that. Okay, so that's pretty much my perspective on the idea.
Well, if you go to Seventh Canto in Srila Prabhupada's books, this is Srila Prabhupada speaking, and the Jayan Vijay pastime, Prabhupada, this is his purport. And I can quote it, the end of that purport, I can quote word for word. And that is that Sukadeva Goswami is telling Maharaj Parikit about this pastime. And Maharaj Parikit is having a hard time with it. And he's questioning it. And then Sukadeva Goswami, I'm going to paraphrase this part of it, is saying, yes, Maharaj, oh, you're paying attention. Actually, Yudhisthira, he also had a problem with this idea. And so Prabhupada goes through a purport where he describes the fall of Jayan Vijay as the arrangement of the Lord for Leela. And at the end of that explanation, he said, yes, it's absolutely unusual. Otherwise, it is a fact that no one falls down from Vaikuntha. So how do you turn that into everyone? This is Prabhupada, word for word.
Into everyone? I don't understand.
Meaning everyone falls down from Krishna Leela.
No, I didn't say that. No, what I'm saying is that it could, as I was saying. I was saying that the free will is always there.
The free will
so
is
so whether you're in Vaikuntha, you know.
But see, Prabhupada's saying, otherwise it is a fact that no one falls down from Vaikuntha. But everybody falls down from Goloka?
No. What I'm saying, in any condition, whether we're in the some kind of like marginal, undeveloped position with Mahavishnu, or whether we're in Vaikuntha, or whether or not yoga. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not written very much, but it is in the Java Dharma, as you explained, the jivas populating in Mahatattva are actually coming from Mahavishnu. And actually, ISKCON gave Michael Cremo, what's his initiated name?
Truta Dharma.
Yeah, he's a scholar. So they gave him the task of showing with Prabhupada's books how we're falling down from Krishna Lila, and he basically made a fool of himself, because you cannot support that with Prabhupada's books. And actually, Narahari, you can come up with that part that you read in some purport. I can come up with 10 different things where you could make a case, the opposite case, where the Brahma Jyoti is filled with living entities. Just by sheer numbers, Prabhupada, one of his purports, he says that there are innumerable living entities within a square inch of the Mahatattva. You know, within, how many living entities are in your backyard? I mean, we're going down to the microbes. How many living entities? You can't count them all. And that's your backyard. What to speak of life. I mean, let me finish this. So then let's go to how many living entities are in Hawaii? How many living entities are in, the Western Hemisphere? How many living entities on the planet Earth? Then expand that to all the innumerable planets, to the innumerable universes. And every one of those living entities has fallen down from Krishna Lila. Is that what we're talking about here?
I just want to just put one thing in. I don't think we should be here to win debates. We're all friends.
No, I'm not.
Here.
It's not a debate. I just respond to that.
So that's Now, from the very beginning, that's the point I was making. To me, it's something to discuss and so on. But the real thing is, we have the process. And so, no matter where we came from, if we just follow the process, then we can, revive our eternal relationship with Krishna.
I agree.
But in the very beginning, it's actually the third time I am saying this. I never said we all fell. It's complicated because the word "fall" is the way I think Prabhupada using that. He uses it in two different fashions, one being accidental fall down, and the other being fall down because of free will. And so to me, again, I'm saying that free will is there at every level, and so I wouldn't say that every jiva soul in the material world, according to that logic, would have come from Krishna Loka, but some of them may have come from Vaikuntha, some of them may have come from association with Mahavishnu. But at every level, my understanding, and that free will is there. Yeah.
Why ignore that one statement by Prabhupada in 7th Canto that otherwise is a fact that no one falls down from Vaikuntha? You're saying that's not the correct statement. The Prabhupada's saying that. How do you say that you have a different opinion than Prabhupada?
Well, I could throw one thing in. I was discussing this with Radhanath Maharaj when he was here. We were sailed off one day, and we were on this little island with myself and Maharaj and Sureshwar and Vatsal, and the topic came up. I was asking Radhanath Maharaj what his opinion was, and he said that the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta approached Bhaktisiddhanta and asked him, and he became very irritated with the question. And he said, "Why are you wasting your time trying to understand something you're not capable of understanding?"
I have a question for Maharaj. This is Radhanarathi.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much for your wonderful class, first of all, Maharaj. But in regard to this topic of where we came from and all of this, I kind of feel the same way with you. I've heard both views, and in my heart, it's my own personal preference which one I'm taking, and it's just for me. And but my question to you is, it's just being, trying to get back home is so difficult right now. I mean, I'm trying everything, like we all are, our spiritual master, and trying to maybe this life get back home. So if we get there, what can we do when we're there so we don't come back here? I mean, what do we do? I mean, what can we do? I mean, if that is that we will fall back down here, what can we do? I don't want to come back. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is I'm struggling to get home. Yeah. I'm struggling, okay? I want to get home.
Okay, so the again, as I understand, and that's the fundamental problem, because we don't want to be able to fall down, Baya, because we don't want to suffer.
Right. I don't want to come back here.
Yeah, but our concern is not to please Krishna. So we're concerned with liberation.
Well, in a way, yes, but in a way, I don't want to come back here because here I am serving Krishna and stuff, but you know, I want to be like full time serving Krishna. I want to be totally absorbed in serving Krishna. I want to be, you know, not having to maintain. And being here in this material world, that's part of being here, is that somehow or another we have to maintain. And sometimes as individuals, we have different ways that we have to maintain ourselves. You know, some can stay home, some have to go to work, some whatever. I want to just be like totally absorbed. And I know that the only way I'll do that is if I go back home. So that's why I don't want to come back here.
So in the Krishna book, you know, Prabhupada says there's no difference between devotional service in the kingdom of God. So for, again, example, like somebody's in the prison as a prisoner and he has a bad attitude and he decides, no, I made a mistake, I'm wrong. But boy, I mean, I have such emotional problems from my childhood. I can't control myself, and then I have no way to make a decent living. What am I supposed to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So then he has a desire to change. So they say, well, there's a psychologist here. Come on, you can go to the psychologist, and he'll help you. And we have regular vocational training programs. So then he's actually very satisfied. And this is the best place for me, because I want to get out. I want to go back. I have a family. But I'm not ready. You know, I'm going to simply cause more problems until I really get my problems taken care of. So at that point, the material world is the very best place for him. And he's satisfied, completely satisfied in his, in following the process. But then maybe at some point as he's maturing, then he actually realizes he has so much ability to talk to other prisoners, and he realizes that his real position in life is actually to be a prison psychologist. You know? And so then he never by here Nrsingho or Ridai Nrsingho, he never, you know, just one example again, not everybody, but some people, then there is no material world. You know? The material world is only our relationship with Krishna. And so if we develop we can have a completely ecstatic, everything else, relationship with Krishna in the so-called material world, if we're here just for his service. Hanuman was, you know, looking for Sita, and at one point he ended up in Ravana's palace with all these, you know, half-naked or, you know, disheveled beauties lying around. They were all like intoxicated from the night's work, and he was looking at all of them. And finally he said, what am I doing? I'm a brahmachari. This is ridiculous, you know. But he said, but you know, if you're going to look for a woman, you've got to go where there are women, you know. And he said, it's the intention which makes something spiritual or material, you know. So that's my understanding. Again, in most cases, we start to analyze it. We want to be forced to enjoy. We want to be forced to be free from suffering. And by and we become frightened. We think that, no, in the end, I'm responsible. Ultimately, Radharani is more powerful than Durga. Okay, that's the hardly hope. But somehow or other, no, in the end, we're there with Krishna. And Krishna himself, you know, the master of unlimited universes, everything else, honestly, really has an interest in us. It's not artificial, because we have free will. And we can do things that amaze him. They're tiny, but he's all very big in his enjoying attitude. And when they become integrated with Radharani, oh, it becomes so, you know, wonderful, you know. So the main thing is just to focus on purifying ourselves, and then at that point, that's a point where it's just inconceivable. It's so intense, it's so direct, you can't think about it, you can't understand it. You just have to do it. And how can I arrange that I won't fall down? You know, one time I heard Satsuru Mars ask Prabhupada, how can I chant better rounds? And Prabhupada looked at him and said, by chanting better rounds. So how can I keep from falling down from Vaikuntha once I go there? By not falling down. And then
the reason I asked the question, I'm personally really satisfied with, in my own heart, that it's not an important question, and it just doesn't matter, and I'm not capable of understanding. Maybe one day I'll understand, maybe not. I guess the reason I ask the question is I preach a lot to new people, particularly at the temple every Sunday. It's my duty that all the new people that come, that we go up to Prabhupada's room and we have intimate talks, and almost invariably, if I have an intelligent group, someone asks the question. And I have my standard ways of answering it, which are usually satisfying. But I guess whenever there's an opportunity, I always kind of like to listen to see if anybody has any new takes or new thoughts, or just if I can present it differently, is because some of the people come up regularly and some are hearing me answer that question for the first time. I'm just looking for new takes on how to deal with that question, because I personally hear it so often, though I'm really satisfied.
Also, I think, too, it's like, is the question, if God is all good, then why is there evil? You know, they're all kind of, some ways, kind of related, you know, some of these things, you know. So they're very fundamental questions, you know, like that, especially that the question of, I'm reading a book by a theologian right now, and the same thing, saying, haven't resolved them. You know? So that's, you know, one thing. That's, I think our point of view is that you may not understand something perfectly, but our point is not, we're not concerned with perfecting our knowledge so much. We're more concerned with perfecting our intention, our motivation, our service. And so I don't know all the answers, but I've got a nice perspective on it and the different logical things. And then, like, the different citations here and there. And then you can go through and discuss them. And there appear to be discrepancies in the scriptures at times. But then by going through, then we begin to sort them out like that.
Srila Prabhupada had two enemies during his preaching time. And one of them was the Mayavadis. And I remember a story where Siddhisvarupa, Prabhu, he was in Pittsburgh and he gave a class. And in that class, he comes from an interpersonal background, but in that class, he mentioned something about the Living Entities Commission, the Brahmajyoti. And I'm not exactly as know his reference, but when he got to Los Angeles, the big guns pulled him into Prabhupada's room, and, you know, because they were complaining to Prabhupada that he had given a class like this. So then Prabhupada told Siddhisrupananda, we are not preaching like this. We're preaching, we are coming from Krishna, you know. And that's the answer to the question. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything is part of Krishna. You know, you don't have to say, you don't have to get into some details about, you know, how it is or what it is. But everything is within Krishna, even though he's not in everything, and everything is coming from Krishna, and we are part of Krishna. And also Krishna, in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 6th verse, says, "The supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire of electricity or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world." And in the purport, Prabhupada says that, but as soon as he reaches the spiritual sky by cutting through the false purgatory of this material world, becomes liberated, then there is no chance of his coming back here. That's Srila Prabhupada, word for word. Okay? I'm not going to some other acharya or Bhaktivinoda even. This is Prabhupada in his books. So we can be coming from Krishna. And at the same time, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're coming from Leela in our Svarup, you know, our Siddhadeha, in service, our service connection with Krishna. It doesn't necessarily mean that. It can be a broad sense. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything, including us.
I had a comment, if I could. I hear these conversations quite a bit. I always like the one where Lord Chaitanya, in his six Sastika prayers, he says, "O son of Maharaj Nanda, somehow or other, I have fallen into this material world." So I always like how Lord Chaitanya, he wasn't really short on being able to explain himself or not being clarified or anything. He says, "Somehow or other." So I'd like to quote him on that one. "Somehow or other."
So please kindly pick me up and place me as a dasa. I'm a dasa at your lotus feet. It would be a great service for me.
Maharaj.
Any questions? Yeah.
Also, I was just going to say, so if you need to go, it's about 8:40, so we are about 10 minutes over. So out of respect for Maharaj, maybe we should go ahead and wrap things up and serve.
Any other question? What it is actually, it's interesting. We have a program at the National Education University in Peru, and the devotee is calling me. And I know what he's calling me about. He wants my presentation. It's almost finished because he has to translate it like that. So you know, it's kind of going to go ahead. But it's very nice having the association of all these devotees in these classes each week. Sunday we're going to go to Peru, and I don't know how the communication is going to be down there. It's very, very interesting. But I know the mangoes are going to be nice.
I could make a quick comment on this controversy thing. I just read this from Sankarshan Prabhu. Somebody asked him directly about the question about falling from the spiritual sky, and his reply was that we don't fall from the spiritual sky. We're only asleep, and when we wake up, we're. And that dream state, we're down here. That was his answer.
I'm absorbed in the bad movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm opening my index up here. American Bhagavad. Actually, this is online. If you go to our webpage and you go to the archives, and citations, under control, click. Yeah. Origin of the Jiva. So a variety of. That's why when I was reading Prabhupada, there's a statement, a very strong statement of Vijaya and Vijaya, which I read. The other places, there are other statements which I find, which, what do I care? Whatever Prabhupada says, I mean, just find out. But as I was reading it, there's some strong statements like that. And there are other statements where Prabhupada was saying, I'm going to look at this whole thing and go through and take your time, look them up, compare the notes like that. Where Prabhupada was saying that we were with Krishna, but somehow or other we did not like to serve Krishna. You know, so we came here. And other places where he's saying that, yes, he asked him, he said, yes, there's always free will. Well, Prabhupada says you never come back. And Prabhupada asked, he says, that means almost never. He says, Krishna, when he said, like when you touch fire, then they never want to touch it again. He said, but still the option is there. So it's like you come to the material world and Krishna is such a perfect reform school that you never want to come back again. But still the option is there. So anyway, discussing the whole thing, it becomes worthwhile. Then there's so many citations and we read back and forth and chant Hare Krishna. But to me, the fundamental thing is this point about is the motivation. Because many, many times I see myself as I don't want to fall down. I want to enjoy, and I'm not giving up my selfish desires for liberation. That it really the whole thing is this: whether I come back or not doesn't matter. Birth after birth in the world doesn't matter. But that's kind of a more advanced situation. But that's the real goal: is just to be serving Krishna without any kind of intelligence or anything else. So anyway, I guess I'll go then. So we'll hope to see you all when we get to South America.
Mara, you will not be available for some time?
No, I don't know. I got to see how the connection is, like that.
Okay.
Yeah, because sometimes it doesn't work.
We're very much indebted to you for all of these weeks for the last 2, maybe even 3 months you've been giving class every week. We just very, very indebted to to you for your association. Don't take it cheaply.
Huh. Okay, so sometime I'll take it out. I get a trip to Hawaii or something.
Okay. Thank you for your association, Maharaj.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. I'll see you. Hopefully I'll see you next week. You know,
like that. That would be great. Yeah. Thank you very much, Hanuman Prashik, Swami.
Jai.
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 Jai. Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai.
Jai. Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. J